Sometimes danger turns up right on your front doorstep.
A lot of killers gain entry to their victims' homes because they knocked on the door.
A racist vigilante turns her hate on the innocent.
Putting a gun up to a child's cheek is basically going to cause her to die instantaneously.
A middle-aged mom goes to extremes to cover up her greed.
The best that could be determined, then she was removed from the car and the process began to dismember her.
And a young woman stalks the elderly to feed her drug habit.
Thank you.
And if you got in her way, you were dead.
Don't open the door for anyone you don't know, period.
These deadly women have one thing on their mind. When they come calling, it's a death knock. When a woman craves notoriety.
She wanted to be seen as someone who was powerful.
That.
When hate consumes her.
Yes.
That's it.
The victim became the victimizer. And in that, she found pleasure.
She can be more dangerous than anyone can imagine.
This wasn't just overkill. This was assassination.
One of the sunniest cities in America, Tucson, Arizona, is arid, tough country. And in 2009, part-time beautician, 41-year-old Shauna Ford, has a personality to match.
Shauna Ford was engaged in a lot of criminal activities as a juvenile. Theft, she engaged in prostitution. She was basically on the streets, struggling to survive.
They're the poorest of the poor.
She was very boisterous, very outgoing. She swore like a sailor.
Shauna's criminal past doesn't stop her from judging right and wrong.
Mexicans.
There is one justice issue she feels strongly about: illegal immigration.
They're third world people, and they're trying to turn our country into a third world country.
Like most things in her life, Shauna takes it a step too far.
They should go back home. Should be against the law.
All right, so what we've got here is we've already discussed area A, B, and C. Tonight we'll be covering area A.
Kind of small, ain't it?
Well, Border Patrol's actually got B and C covered.
She joins a group she thinks share her hardline views.
Nice of you to join us, Shauna. This is my seat. Now, the important thing to remember tonight is to bring lots of water.
The Minutemen organization are comprised of a number of Americans who are upset about the number of illegal immigrants coming up from Mexico.
What it does, you can push it, sweetheart.
Okay.
I have to hear you.
Another thing is the binoculars and extra batteries.
This is the only protection I need.
It turned out that Shauna Ford was even further to the right, or much more conservative than these groups. She had an idea of patrolling the borders armed, taking more aggressive action, and even the groups in Arizona thought that she was a little too wacko even for them.
I'm telling you, put that thing away or go.
Okay. I'll see you out there, girls.
Keep going.
She was so bad, the Minutemen didn't even want her. She started her own group.
Minuteman American Defense is born. Shauna Ford, president.
Being a Minuteman gave Shauna a purpose, and it also allowed her to direct her hostility and anger at the world on people that she was able to justify deserved her anger and hostility: illegal immigrants.
Recruits roll in. 34-year-old Jason Bush is as passionate as President Shauna.
You know I used to be in the military.
He claimed to have a very lengthy military history and claimed to be a sniper and had a whole slew of military honors behind his name, none of which turned out to be true.
The vigilantes are enthusiastic, but low on funds. Shauna plans to raise money from a surprising source.
It's time to hit one of those drug gangs.
She had the idea that she would fund her Minuteman activities by robbing drug dealers, or what she thought were drug dealers.
There's drugs on the street, and we can use the cash.
Apparently thinking that when you rob a drug dealer, no one is going to report that to the police.
Amongst her posse is 42-year-old Albert Gacciola, who has drug connections himself.
She recruited Albert Gacciola to get involved in her group, knowing that he had drug competitors in the area and that he had a vested interest in getting rid of the competition.
All the three brothers?
Yes.
Albert thinks the town of Aravaca near the border is a good place to start.
I got you talking.
In the family home of a one-time friend.
Raul Flores.
Mr. Flores had the reputation in Aravaca of dealing in some marijuana.
That is the guy I'm gonna hit.
Yeah!
We believe that Albert Gacciola planted the seed in Shauna Ford's mind that that would be her first target.
For me?
Yeah.
She was told that Junior Flores would have between $2 and $3 million in cash in his home, in addition to a large amount of drugs and guns.
Shauna and her recruits get ready to raid Raul's home. They arm themselves with military-grade weapons. The Flores family, Raul, wife Gina, and their 9-year-old daughter, Brazinia, are about to get a death knock. In Tucson, Arizona, 41-year-old Shauna Ford is a vigilante with a mission.
As soon as this went back to here,
after a life of petty crime and violence, she has found her calling. Shauna wants to catch illegal immigrants with money stolen from drug dealers. She recruits 34-year-old Jason Bush and 42-year-old Albert Gacciola.
Shauna was very full of herself. She was grandiose. That's a crazy idea, thinking that it's okay to rob a drug dealer in their home.
At 1 a.m., May 30th, 2009, 29-year-old Raul Junior Flores answers the door to what he thinks are border security officials.
Shauna Ford announced their presence, said that they were Border Patrol, that they were looking for fugitives.
For Shauna and her recruits, this will not be a simple robbery.
Junior Flores noticed immediately that there was something odd.
It's a cold-blooded execution.
Don't take it personally.
I'll search the house!
Raul was shot several times and probably was dead within moments.
But Gina is only wounded.
Gina Gonzalez fell to the floor and pretended as though she were dead.
Lying near her dead husband, Gina's thoughts are on one thing. Her daughter is in the next room.
As she lay there, she kept saying to herself, God, please, 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 let Brazinia continue to sleep through this.
9-year-old Brazinia wakes up to see her world shattered.
She woke up and she saw these people in her house and she saw her mother and father shot, she began screaming.
Gina is powerless as she listens to her terrified daughter's ordeal.
She heard Bresenia, who's in tears at this point, keep asking questions. The gunman keeps reassuring her, we're not gonna hurt you, we're not gonna hurt you.
Once Jason is sure the little girl is the only other person in the house, the hired killer turns on her.
He proceeded to shoot her twice in the face at point-blank range as Gina Gonzalez sat there listening, horrified. This was a 9-year-old girl caught up in something she had nothing to do with, and she died while begging for her life.
What's happening?
What'd you find?
That's it.
Shauna team search the house, but find no drugs or money. They steal two lives and critically wound Gina for no more than a few pieces of jewelry.
I think the fact that Shauna stole jewelry is pretty clear. Shauna's just a common, common thief who became a murderer.
But the horror hasn't ended for Gina.
She put out of her mind the fact that her husband had been murdered, her child's head had been blown away, that she herself was in tremendous pain. She dragged herself into the next room, and she called 911.
Somebody just came in and they shot my daughter and my husband.
As she calls for help, the murderous posse return to pick up a gun they have left behind.
As she was on the phone with 911, she saw Shauna Ford come back into the house. Fortunately for Gina, there was a handgun in the kitchen. It was her husband's handgun. She was able to fire back at these intruders.
She manages to wound Jason Bush, and the shooters flee. But they leave behind a survivor, and Gina thinks she recognizes one of the assailants.
Law enforcement officials interviewed Gina Gonzalez, and Gina Gonzalez informed them that she thought one of the people ransacking her home that evening might be Albert Gagliola.
It's not investigators' only clue. Soon after the murders, the FBI get a visit from a man who tells them Shauna is planning another home invasion.
Shauna Ford told this man that they had accomplished their first mission, and now they were planning their second. So she had so little remorse for the death of this 9-year-old that her immediate plans were to go out and conduct another home invasion.
FBI and police join forces to track down Shauna and her posse.
Albert Gagliola's cell phones led them to Shauna Ford. And the blood on the outside of the van and inside the van was later linked to Jason Bush, the gunman.
We're looking for fugitives. Are there any in this house?
Shauna portrays herself as a patriot, defending her country from illegal immigrants, but instead proves she is no more than a callous killer.
One of the most appalling things about the case was the violence to the little girl. That more than anything, the coldness of it.
All three are convicted of 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of attempted first-degree murder. Albert Gagliola is sentenced to life, no chance of parole. Jason Bush receives the death penalty, as does Shauna Ford in February 2011. She awaits her execution in Arizona's state prison.
Shauna Ford was who she was because of choices that she made. She chose to be who she was.
Shauna has never expressed any remorse for the man that was shot and the 9-year-old girl because she has no feeling for anyone else. She's empty inside. She's not sorry. She's a sociopath to the depths of her soul.
New friendships can be exhilarating.
Some of the people that she associated with were not people that had her best interests at heart.
But when you invite the wrong person into your life,
she thought she was just a new fun friend.
You flirt with danger.
There are killers and there are bad killers.
And we really would have a good time, you know?
Hollister, Missouri, 1989. A roadside discovery shocks the small town and sparks an enduring mystery.
A school teacher was on the way home from work and saw a black plastic trash bag that was partially on the road, and she was curious as to what it was. She looked at it and saw pretty immediately that there was blood inside the bag.
The bag holds human remains, pieces of a woman's body.
She was cut about midsection. Her arms had been removed. Those were never found. Her head was removed as well, basically cut into three parts.
Despite the condition of the body, it was easy to determine what killed her, and that was a single gunshot wound to the back of the head.
The victim is 66-year-old Wilma Plaster, a recent widow and much-loved resident of Hollister.
She'd been married for about 40 years to her husband, who was a minister. Very nice lady, and did have friends and neighbors that cared about her.
One of those caring friends is 53-year-old Shirley Jo Phillips.
Wilma and Shirley Jo were new friends. They liked to do a few things together. They went out to country western bars to listen to music.
After losing her husband, Wilma is ready to start a new life.
She was looking for maybe a little bit of fun. And this new friend of hers, Shirley Jo Phillips, seemed to be the ticket to maybe new adventures.
However, when police start to investigate Wilma's death, they uncover something suspicious about her friend's adventures.
I'd love some tea.
Wilma thought she had found a new friend in Shirley. Shirley thought she had found a victim.
It appears to police that Shirley Jo has been stealing money from Wilma.
There had been a check written on Wilma Plaster's account in the amount of $4,050, and it was written to Shirley Phillips. It turned out that that check was a forgery. It was not written by Wilma.
Wilma was the perfect victim. She was someone who was trusting and naive.
I think Shirley's appearance made it easy for her to deceive people as to what was really in her heart.
The police suspect Shirley is behind the forgery.
Not much is known about Shirley's background, but what we do know is that she used several aliases. Shirley was probably committing crimes from the time she was a young girl.
But theft isn't murder. And the last moments of Wilma's life remain a mystery. until a woman comes forward with a startling claim.
A friend recalls how she saw Shirley Joe under her porch. Police go and look in that location, and they find two plastic bags.
And in the trash bags were canceled checks with Wilma's name on them. And also there was a gun.
Shirley Joe's fingerprints are all over the bags.
It turned out to be the gun that had killed Wilma Plaster.
Although strong, the evidence is circumstantial. And there will be more as police investigate further. Shirley Joe is linked in many ways.
It was a matter of trying to piece back where she'd been, who she'd been with. Investigators began to look at that issue and look for Shirley Phillips as someone who might have knowledge about the case.
That's tough. You can use that.
Police do know that 3 days before Wilma's body is found, she is seen with Shirley Joe.
They were partying, having a good time, and that was the last time anyone saw Wilma alive.
Here we go.
Cheers.
Bottoms up, as they say.
Bottoms up.
Here we go. My coffee don't need that.
In Hollister, Missouri, in 1989, new friends, 53-year-old Shirley Joe Phillips and 66-year-old Wilma Plaster share a love of country music and having a good time. But the night of October 3rd will be their last night on the town. 3 days later, Wilma's dismembered body is found. Investigators find forged checks and a weapon. Witnesses had seen the couple together at the bar. But only one woman makes it home alive.
We really would have a good time, you know?
Of course, we won't know the details of exactly how that happened.
I'm so glad.
But while she was in the car, she was shot in the back of the head. We're sure from the blood evidence in the car.
Wilma is killed instantly.
A .38 caliber gunshot wound to the head is virtually always fatal. The injury is so severe that brain up to 3 to 4 inches from the path of the bullet is damaged.
But a bullet isn't the only damage to Wilma's body.
The best that could be determined through the investigation was that after Wilma was shot and killed, then she was removed from the car and the process began to dismember her.
It's a lot easier to dig a grave and put a body in it than to dismember a human body. There was something about that destruction of the body that was important to do.
Wilma's arms and head are removed with garden shears and a knife. A tough job for a small, middle-aged woman.
If there's enough time and enough determination and effort, anyone can dismember a human body. It's going to take a great deal of effort. It's going to be a bloody job.
Despite the gruesome act, the crime scene is remarkably clean.
Really, there wasn't much visible at Wilma's house. There wasn't really any signs of violence. There wasn't any signs of blood. It really had been cleaned after it had been used in some way.
But a forensic test looks past the bleach and reveals the truth.
Luminol reacts to the presence of blood by turns fluorescent if you turn the lights off. So we had bloody tracks, in essence, through the house.
The blood trail once again points to Shirley Joe.
The blood evidence in Shirley's car was in the form of splatters, blood splatters, in connection with the headrest on the passenger side.
There was blood in the car, there was blood in the garage, there was blood in the house. All of it belonged to Wilma. Somebody that would cut somebody up in little pieces is probably the most disgusting, sick, twisted person that I could possibly imagine.
Police also think they have a motive. The $4,000 check Shirley Joe forged.
We had things taken from the house that were associated with the check, and we believe it was the reason that Shirley ended up killing her was to cover up the fact that she'd stolen that money from her. It was a mixture, really, of circumstantial evidence. Really wasn't too much else beyond that. There was no direct evidence in the sense of no eyewitness testimony, but it was a very strong circumstantial evidence case.
The jury agrees. In 1992, Shirley Joe Phillips is convicted of first-degree murder and receives the death penalty. Her sentence is later commuted to life in prison.
She's in a correctional facility in the state of Missouri and will be for the rest of her life.
But there is a twist to this story. At the time of Shirley's arrest, another dismembered body is identified.
Over in Oklahoma, another body had been found, at least body parts. Tiny little packages wrapped up in foil of eyes, ears, nose, and fingers were found wrapped up in foil and set on the side of the road.
The body parts are of Shirley Joe's own mother.
Shirley Phillips' mother's body was found on Mother's Day of 1989, a few months before Wilma was killed.
Shirley's mother, Layla, had been reported missing in actually the previous spring, and Shirley had told people that Layla had gone off on a trip somewhere.
And Shirley actually kept a diary of what her mother was doing and phone calls from her mother, many of which were after the date that the body parts were found.
Knowing one person who is dismembered is rare. Being closely connected to two such murders is almost inconceivable.
She was certainly a suspect in connection with that, but there was never any charges filed and no way to know if she was really responsible for that.
Shirley was the prime suspect in her mother's death. There's a backstory there to Shirley and her mother. Only Shirley knows. But I have no trouble with her spending the rest of her days in prison. There are killers, and there are bad killers. It would take a really bad and twisted killer to dismember someone that they knew.
The most important thing to a predator is prey.
Generally, whatever was around is what she'd take.
Separate the victim from the herd.
She was becoming more and more sophisticated in how she would get them along.
And don the perfect disguise.
Don't open the door unless you know who's on the other side.
Chicago, in the late 1980s. 34-year-old Dorothy Williams is a woman in a long-term relationship with crack cocaine.
This was a young woman with trouble from the very beginning. Dorothy was a drug user, a drug addict, and she had been for a very long time. In fact, by the time she was 14, she was using heroin and cocaine.
Like many addicts, Dorothy's affliction dominates her life. Her actions and decisions driven by one thing.
To get enough money for a fix, that was really all that mattered. It was going off in her head over and over, I need drugs.
Dorothy isn't earning any money. She steals to feed her habit.
Dorothy hung around the Chicago Housing Authority, which is a place for elderly people, and she would look for somebody that maybe she could victimize for money.
Dorothy picked her victims very carefully, not unlike a predator that moves around the outside of the herd, looking for someone weak, looking for someone helpless, looking for someone that wouldn't put up a fight.
Hello?
She tried to set up a situation where she was alone with someone that was helpless.
I'm from the community.
Many elderly adults live alone.
Come around, right on in.
Sometimes she would pose as a nurse. She would go to somebody's home and say that the county sent me and I'm here to help you. But really what she was doing was trying to get inside the house.
Give me your money.
Dorothy moves from apartment to apartment, robbing the elderly.
Dorothy was a very strong woman. These were all folks, you know, well into their 70s or 80s, rather slight, frail, elderly senior citizens. Not much match for Dorothy Williams.
Another victim. Another fix. Robbery isn't Dorothy's only illegal means of getting cash.
She was selling herself for money. I believe that Dorothy was working as a prostitute in senior buildings.
In 1987, Dorothy visits a regular customer, Lonnie Laws.
I ain't paying you nothing, girl. You better go and get out of here.
Lonnie was 79 years old. She was trying to get him to pay her some money, and they had an altercation.
You need to pay me now, Lonnie.
I ain't got money. Don't you go.
When Lonnie refuses to give Dorothy extra cash, she takes intimidation one step further.
She became enraged. She took his belt and actually strangled a 79-year-old for the $50. After she strangled him, she goes through the house again looking for whatever she can get that she could sell or that she could keep for herself.
Dorothy has a total disregard for other humans. She treats them like garbage. She would do anything for money. Robbery, burglary, prostitution, and finally, murder.
Lonnie Laws dies for little more than loose change.
She was ready, willing, and able to kill if somebody resisted sufficiently to keep her from getting what she wanted.
A year later, the murder remains unsolved. ...64-year-old Caesar Zuell has no idea he is keeping company with a dangerous woman until he refuses to give Dorothy money.
When he didn't pay, she and he got into a scuffle there in his apartment.
Come on, 50 bucks.
I ain't giving you no money.
He was trying to save his own life when he pulled out a pocket knife.
Get away from me! I'm paying you nothing.
She grabbed that knife and stabbed him to death.
She was out to get all the money that she needed. And if you got in her way, you were dead.
Again, the cash rewards for murder are small. To Dorothy, it doesn't matter.
One thing that tells me that Dorothy really liked killing people was some of her targets were very, very elderly people. She could have controlled them with a threat, a push. But she chose to really hurt them.
Two elderly gentlemen are dead. Dorothy is becoming a monster. Chicago, Illinois, 1989. To fuel a drug addiction, 34-year-old Dorothy Williams starts stealing from, then murdering, the elderly.
In the animal world, predators stalk the young, the weak, and the elderly. And Dorothy Williams was no different.
Dorothy is a predator with abundant prey.
The most vulnerable people that she could find were in some of these senior public housing projects where she could get access, get inside, and take advantage of people.
July 25th is a day like any other for Mary Harris and her daughter, Marianne.
Marianne had spent about 4 or 5 hours with Mary earlier in the day, attempting to, you know, just help out around the house and spending time with her mother.
Mary Harris was just a sweet little old lady. She was 97 years old.
Marianne leaves. She has no idea her mom is being stalked.
A lot of killers gain entry to their victims' homes because they knocked on the door and pretended to be friendly and helpful.
Hi. Hello. I was running some errands.
Don't open the door for anyone you don't know. Period.
Wanted to know if you wanted anything. Oh, how nice.
Mary has no reason to be suspicious when charming Dorothy offers to run an errand.
Mary asked her to go to the store and get some milk. She put $2 down on the table. And as she did that, Dorothy noticed a stereo system that she knew she could sell for money to feed her drug habit. So the next thing that happened was she and Mary got into a tussle.
Mary was wearing a scarf around her head. She pulled it down over her head and neck and started to choke her with her scarf that she was wearing.
Dorothy has abundant strength to simply subdue the feeble woman and walk away with the spoils. But she chooses to subdue her victim forever. A long life stolen at the hand of a thief.
Mary Harris was survived to age 97 in good health, had a daughter that she loved, and that she made it all those years. And Dorothy, you know, Dorothy ended it. Without Dorothy, she would have lived to be 100.
I think there's a special place in hell for people who prey on the elderly. There just is.
Hunting for money or anything she can sell, Dorothy loots the dead woman's home.
And she ransacked that house. She opened every drawer, turned things out, and left with the stereo and the $2. That's what the value of a human life.
Dorothy has already gotten away with 2 murders and has become complacent. She leaves Mary's apartment in full view of a neighbor.
He saw Dorothy Williams, who he knew did not belong in the building, walking out of the building carrying a box.
He kind of was curious. Why was she coming out of Mary's apartment? Where was she going, and what did she have in that box?
Excuse me, sir, is this your apartment?
Oh, no.
Mary's body is discovered later that night.
Did you see any
other witnesses start coming forward with a detailed description of Dorothy.
She's tall lady.
Tall lady.
Taller than yourself.
Taller than
myself.
Yeah.
Black lady, white lady.
Black lady.
Okay. So the word is out. People are trying to find Dorothy. Where did she go? What did she have to do in terms of Mary's death? And this witness saw her at a bus stop. She had dyed her hair and she was wearing glasses. She obviously was trying to change her appearance to get away from what she had done.
But she can't run away from the forensics. Her fingerprints are all over Mary's apartment. Confronted with the evidence, Dorothy confesses. Investigators dig deeper.
It was by, you know, learning that she had done this that someone realized, my God, let's check some of these other cases. Is it possible she's done this before? And that's when they discovered her fingerprints on the scene of both the homicide of Lonnie Laws and the homicide of Caesar Zwell.
Two more sets of fingerprints lead to two more confessions. On April 18th, 1991, Dorothy Williams is sentenced to death for the murder of Mary Harris and two life sentences for killing Lonnie Laws and Caesar Zwell.
Dorothy is currently serving her term at the Dwight Correctional Center. A few years ago, her death sentence was commuted to a life sentence.
Many believe it was the illicit drugs that caused the death of these three innocent victims. Dorothy didn't see frail, elderly people. She just saw her next fix.
I don't think Dorothy cared who she killed, whose grandmother it was. It was just somebody that was in the way of what she wanted, which was that money.
Dorothy Williams is a serial killer, plain and simple. If she hadn't been stopped after three murders, who knows how high the body count would be. She needs to spend the rest of her life in prison. She's exactly where she needs to be.
These deadly women turned on their victims in their own homes. Shauna Ford orchestrated an innocent family's violent death. Shirley Jo Phillips exploited a lonely widow. And Dorothy Williams preyed on the weakest among us. They made sure home wasn't a haven when they made their death knock.